Dun-dun. Dun-dun-dun-dun. Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. Hello, it's Chuck again with another episode of Television, because friends and family are not enough. No, they are not. Never have been, never will be. So in this episode, we're going to quickly review two new shows for the 2018-2019 network television season so far that I've seen, which is the reboot of Magnum P.I., hence the theme song that you're listening to right now of the original Magnum P.I. And then we're going to review Manifest on ABC. So thank you for listening, and here we go. So, I went ahead and watched the pilot episode for the reboot of Magnum P.I. on CBS, which was on Monday night. I believe it was at 9 o'clock. And I have to say, it does not suck. It does not suck at all. The thing is, this genre, this action-adventure drama series genre on television has never really been my thing. If I'm going to watch an action adventure drama series, then it's going to have either a lot of sex and or dragons. So those are the ones that I enjoy much more. So I'll be honest, I don't believe I will be having my DVR record every episode of Magnum PI, but I can see that it's they've done a great job in keeping enough of like the original, but obviously updating it, and it does feel fresh. This time around, Magnum is not Tom Selleck, obviously, or else he would be doing it from a motorized wheelchair with an oxygen tank, because he's pretty old now. No, not really. I think he's on like Blue Bloods. He's doing just fine. But it's Jay Hernandez, who is hot. I'll just go ahead and say that. Very, very attractive man. And so he's playing the role of Magnum. And first of all, a little history with Magnum P.I. For those of you who don't remember, it was originally on CBS from 1980 to 1988. It was a pretty popular show. It was in the top 20 for 5 seasons, and it was a number 3 most watched show in America in 1982 to 1983. I believe it tied with like MASH, and that would have been like MASH's last season. So it was a very, very popular show. And Tom Selleck was nominated for an Emmy nearly every season for Best Actor in a Drama, and he won once. The interesting thing about Magnum P.I. is that CBS had Hawaii Five-0, which I think lasted at least 10 seasons, and they had invested a lot of money in the production facilities in Honolulu in order to film the show. So they were kind of looking for an excuse to keep their production facilities going, even after Hawaii Five-0 was not really highly rated anymore, and it was obviously time for it to end. So they went ahead and came up with Magnum P.I., and that's pretty smart and very efficient, I have to say, of CBS and the production companies. So anyway, so I saw the pilot. Not gonna really do any, tell you any spoilers, although I really don't think there were spoilers necessarily. It's the pilot episode. I mean, it just sets up the series, obviously, and the characters and whatnot. The big change on this show is that the character of Hillerman, if you remember in Magnum P.I., the original Magnum P.I., the reason that Magnum P.I. lived in that incredible mansion with the two Doberman Pinschers is that the mansion belonged to a world-famous author, I believe named Robin Wright, and John Hillerman was the very snooty British man who I guess Robin Wright hired to just keep the place for him, because apparently he was never there. We never saw Robin Wright. And at the last season, it was speculated that all along, John Hillerman was actually the author and yada, yada, yada. But anyway, so in this new version, same exact setup. There's an author, Robin Wright, who somehow knows Magnum and his three other buddies from the military days, and he uses them as inspiration to write some best-selling novels. And but this time around, Hillerman is a woman, because of course it's going to be a woman, a British woman. And therefore, it sets up what I'm assuming is gonna be a classic television network plot line, which is, will they or wouldn't they or won't they? Which means, of course, that the two main actors who have to work together, and they kind of hate each other, but they like each other and they need each other, and will they wind up sleeping together? So it's kind of like the premise to Moonlighting back in the day in the 80s as well as Who's the Boss? You know, how many seasons can we go until the two people finally do it? So I'm pretty sure that's what's going to happen here. And the other interesting thing about the show that I found that I liked was the character of Rick, whose real name actually I think is Orville, but he hates that, so he goes by Rick. That was a character in the original Magnum PI as well. And this time it's played by Zachary Knighton, who was from the sitcom on ABC called Happy Endings, kind of a while ago. Never really watched it, but I remember hearing about it, and I remember always kind of loving Zachary Knighton, because he is also hot, like Jay Hernandez, but in a different way. I wonder, in this new Magnum, will the character of Rick be set up to be gay, because he dresses extremely well, and there is a scene where he sings and dances along to the Spice Girls' hit song Wannabe. So that makes me think maybe they're trying to go that angle with that character, but well, we'll see. Anyway, also, I wonder if they are going to cross over Magnum PI with CBS's reboot of Hawaii Five-0. I don't know how many of you know this, but several years ago, CBS started a reboot of Hawaii Five-0. It was doing pretty well. I think now it's on like Friday night, so maybe it's towards the end. But since both shows are set in Hawaii and they're both you know, crime, action, adventure, detective work type of situation, I would not be surprised if they crossed over. I wouldn't be surprised at all. So anyway, that was my review of the pilot of Magnum PI, the reboot of Magnum PI. I don't think I'll continue watching it unless there's nothing else on TV, but that doesn't really happen anymore, because I can always turn to my Apple TV and then have 1,000 different things to watch if there's no new episode or nothing good on ABC, CBS, or NBC, because this is not the 80s or the 70s. So I probably will not watch Magnum PI anymore. But I have to say, it does not suck. I wish it well, and I wouldn't be surprised if it does all right. So, of course, I wonder what you all think if you watched it. All right, that wraps up a review of Magnum PI. And next up, the review of Manifest. Okay, so I also watched Manifest, the new show on NBC, Mondays at 10 p.m. This is the show that I've been looking forward to for months, because it is Lost-like. Everyone remembers the legendary show that was Lost, and that it introduced to us, I guess, event television, a show so gripping, so fascinating that we could not stop watching and analyzing every tiny little detail of every episode for its 7 seasons. And then, of course, it ended, for most of us, we think, a little disappointing, but that's another story for another podcast. So Manifest has the potential to be like Lost in the sense that there's something supernatural, something sci-fi going on. It also involves a plane, just like Lost did. I'm definitely going to keep watching this Manifest show. I will. I watched the pilot, and I will definitely continue watching it. It is weak. It is not as strong as Lost. I think Lost was just a once in a lifetime show. Everything just must have come together so perfectly, and it invested a lot into the minute little details. Manifest does not go into details. There is definitely a weakness in the plot line and certain scenes, just the overall feel of it, some of the script, the dialogue. there's only one, I guess, really well-known person, which is Josh Dallas, who used to be on Once Upon a Time, which actually kind of like Lost, because we didn't really know anyone in Lost except for what's-his-face, who used to be on Party of Five. But anyway, so the pilot. Let me recap here what we saw in this pilot episode. We are introduced by a narrator to the show. The narrator is the character Michaela Stone, who is a police officer in New York. She is at an airport in Jamaica with her family, who have just finished their vacation in Jamaica and heading back to New York. Her family consists of her parents, and then also her brother, who is played by Josh Dallas. His name is Ben, and Ben's wife, whose name is Grace, as well as Ben and Grace's children, who are twins, Olive and Cal. And Cal has leukemia. So we find all this out while they're waiting to board the plane. Then there's an announcement that the flight is full and that they're going to give vouchers for people who don't mind waiting for the next flight. Because of the expense of Cal's leukemia treatments and whatnot, Ben suggests that he, Cal, and Michaela all wait for the next flight. So the rest of the family, the parents, as well as Grace and the daughter, Olive, they all leave. And the other three wait for the flight, flight 828. And of course, at some point during the flight, there is some crazy turbulence, and then everything goes back to normal, and the pilot simply says, oh, sorry, we didn't see that weather disturbance on the radar, and the pilot starts to call in to New York to land, and the people at the airport, the control tower, I guess they call it, they're like, who are you? What's going on? So they tell the plane to go land in an airport nearby, a regional airport. I believe it's Newburgh, New York, they said, to land there instead. All right, so they land there. Everybody gets off the plane. There's all kinds of cops and, I don't know, FBI. I don't know who else is there, but FAA, I'm assuming, people there. And almost immediately, they go ahead and tell the crowd, all the passengers have gotten off the plane, and they tell all the passengers that it's 5 years, 6 months, and like 28 days later than the day they left. The flight left Jamaica on April 7th, 2013, but the day that they landed in Newburgh, New York is November 4th, 2018. So, of course, everyone's freaked out. And then you see them, you see the officials interviewing the pilots and a few of the passengers, especially the three passengers that now we know of. And of course, no one knows what the heck, went on. No one knows what could have possibly happened. And the officials don't believe, that they didn't land somewhere and just basically lived on an island or something for 5 years and then suddenly got the plane, back up and running and back to New York. And then, strangely, and this is one of the things that, to me, bothers me about television when it's not the script and the production is not really tight, they let the people go. They let 36 hours after the plane lands in Newburgh and the officials are trying to figure out where this plane has been for 5 years, they let the relatives of their passengers come and pick them up and take them home. I don't think that would have happened. I think all those passengers would have been put into some sort of facility to be studied for like weeks. I am assuming that's what would happen. But anyway, they let them go. So this family that was introduced to us, they go ahead and go home. Now, of course, they find out that the mother had actually died at some point in the past 5 years, so that's sad. Michaela, she was engaged when she went on the trip to Jamaica, but of course her fiancé has moved on and I believe is married to someone else. And of course, the twin, Olive, the girl, she's older, and her twin brother is still the same age, so that's crazy, of course. Then we find out, of course, that that the twin, Cal, he still has leukemia. And then here's one of the first twists. Okay, because there's two big twists that happened during the episode to, I guess, set up the premise of the series if it goes on, which I think it might, at least one season. The first thing that they show us is that one of the passengers that was on the plane, her name was Sanvi, and she was a grad student and a medical researcher. And of course, her project had to do with pediatric leukemia treatment. And apparently, she was on her laptop when the turbulence started. And apparently, she sent 6 years worth of her research to, you know, her her boss or whoever, the head of the facility in New York, and during those 5 years, they used her research to make a treatment that had an incredible result. And so, of course, Cal is now they're putting up Cal as one of the as one of the children who deserves to also be on this new drug and this new treatment to get rid of his leukemia. So there's that. So that's coincidence, you know, going on. You know, maybe Sanvi had to be on that plane so that she could save Cal or whatever. So there's the first thing. The other thing is that Michaela starts to hear voices. She's on a bus, and she hears a voice, her own voice, in her head telling her, and she gets a headache, and she hears the voice telling her very loudly, slow down, slow down, slow down. So she tells the bus driver to slow down, and that ends up saving some kid who had just come out into the street a minute later. So, okay, so there's like a psychic thing going on there. They wound up with psychic powers. All right, so maybe this is what's going on. Sure enough, a couple scenes later, we find out that her brother Ben has the same situation. They both keep hearing a voice, their voices, telling them, set them free, set them free, set them free, whenever they passed in front of a salvage yard with two German Shepherd watchdogs, security dogs, chained inside this salvage yard. So they both assume that it means set the two dogs free, and they did. Of course, that was breaking and entering. Somebody filmed it, and there's a whole thing, because Michaela is also a cop. Yes, there's a whole thing. Oh, and Michaela, actually, we also learned that right before the trip to Jamaica, apparently she got a desk job because somebody got murdered during, and maybe it was her fault, but it wasn't her fault. There's a whole thing. I'm sure we'll find out more about that soon. But anyway, she is a cop, and her fiancé before she boarded the plane, before she went on the vacation to Jamaica, who's now moved on and become a detective. He, of course, works in the same precinct. And so she, of course, cannot explain, you know, because in television, when somebody suddenly has something crazy happening with them, you know, God forbid you might do what I think we would do in real life, which is go back to the FAA people who were there at the airport studying this mystery and tell them, hey, hi, I'm getting psychic, thoughts into my head, and they're turning out to be true. So let's figure this out. No, God forbid that might happen. So instead, she doesn't explain anything, and so her ex-fiance detective is going to says that he's going to figure it out, so you know she doesn't get in trouble. And they go to the salvage yard because they found the dogs in a kennel or someplace nearby. The pound, I guess. And they bring the dogs back, so hoping that the guy who owns the salvage yard and owns the dogs is not going to press charges. And while they're there, of course, Michaela starts hearing the voice again. And she hears the voice saying, set them free, set them free, set them free. And she kind of follows the voice to some container with a lock on it. She opens the lock, and there are two girls in there that this guy had kidnapped and was keeping inside some storage container. Okay. So now we know that this psychic thing obviously really works. It's very effective, and it helps. And maybe it's, you know, they're back with this psychic power on purpose. So great, we'll find out where that goes. Also, there's a numbers thing. Remember in Lost, where the numbers 4, 8, 15, 16, 23, and 42 were such a big deal, and they were all somehow involved in everybody's lives before the plane crash, and then on the island and all that stuff? Well, this show, Manifest, has a thing with the numbers 8 to 8. The flight was flight 828. the address at the salvage yard where they first saw the dogs, and then obviously found the two girls that had been kidnapped by the owner of the salvage yard. The address was 828. And also, there's a pillow that Michaela's mom had made for her with a psalm. Is that what you call it? A psalm from the Bible? I don't know anything about the Bible. It's a very boring book. But Psalm 828, which of course Michaela goes to a church to open a Bible and read the psalm. I did not pick up exactly what the psalm said. It had something to do with people deserving something or being called or something like that. So there's this number thing, and so I guess we'll find out what happens with that. And the episode ends with Michaela and her brother Ben asking each other, well, if we're having this psychic power situation thing, these voices in our head, then maybe other people do. And sure enough, as Michaela narrates about what kind of happens next, we see scenes of many of the passengers having these voices in their heads, and the voices are all calling them back to the airport to the plane. And they all basically arrive at the airport around the same time, and they're all just basically in the parking lot on the other side of the chain link fence, far away from the plane, but basically all staring at the plane, and then the plane blows up, because of course it does. So what does that mean? Who knows what? But I have to say, I will stay tuned next Monday. I will record it, and I will see where this show goes. So I wonder if any of you have seen Manifest yet, and what do you think? And do you feel it deserves to continue watching it past the pilot episode? So let me know. And yep, let me know. All right, now to end this episode, we are going to play another round of my favorite game, and I hope it becomes your favorite game as well. What would we programmed our DVR to record if the DVR always existed? And for today, because we're going with the theme, of course, of reviewing the reboot of Magnum PI, I have chosen the night of a Thursday in the fall of 1980, which is when Magnum P.I. premiered. So we're going to look at what was on TV, what were our choices from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. on a Thursday in the fall of 1980, and we're going to see what would I program the DVR to record. So at 8 p.m. on ABC was Mork and Mindy. And then at 8:30, Bosom Buddies. Everybody remember that with Tom Hanks and Peter Scolaria, I believe his name was. No, not Peter Scolaria. Yeah, it was actually. And then at 9 o'clock is Barney Miller. And at 9:30, It's a Living. Does everybody remember It's a Living? I used to like It's a Living. It was on network television and then it became syndicated. And it was just about the waitresses, the chef, the hostess, and the piano player at a restaurant in the top of, I believe back then it was called the Buenaventura Hotel in downtown Los Angeles, the round building with the revolving restaurant on top. That was a cute show, and that is rarely on now. I can't even find it on YouTube, sad. Anyway, and then on ABC at 10 o'clock is 2020. Which I'm assuming Barbara Walters was on it all the way from the beginning, Barbara Walters and Hugh Downs. But anyway, on CBS on Thursday in 1980, we've got The Waltons from 8 to 9. And then there was Magnum P.I. And then Knott's Landing, which of course is the spinoff of Dallas. On NBC from 8 to 9 is a show called Games People Play. I do not recall this show. I'm assuming it was not that much of a hit. Or else I would know it. And then from 9 to 11 is the NBC Thursday movie. So again, whenever these weekly movies were on, it's not really worth recording if we don't know what movie was actually playing on that specific night. So if we're pretending that this is a Thursday in the fall of 1980, and these are our choices, I am going to have the DVR record Mork and Mindy and Bosom Buddies on ABC from 8 to 8:30 and from 8:30 to 9. And then I'm going to have it record
not Magnum P.I. Sadly, I'm going to go ahead and skip Magnum P.I. I'm going to have it record Barney Miller and It's a Living. And then, ooh, it's a toss-up between 2020 and Knott's Landing. I was never a big fan of Knott's Landing. Did watch Dallas religiously. But I enjoyed 2020. They did a lot of great stories. I guess I would have to find out what stories were being covered that night. So let's just say, yes, it'll be 2020. So it looks like it'll be an ABC night because I'll have the DVR record all the shows on ABC from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. And I wonder what you would have recorded if you had your DVR in the fall of 1980. So anyway, thank you very much for joining me, and I hope you will join me on the next episode of Television, because friends and family are not enough.